to Monitor Music by Werner Muller's orchestra. It's all about Delilah. And me too, Gary Moore, that is.
What do you get when you fall in love? Girl with a pin to burst your bubble. That's what you get for all your trouble. Oh, never fall in love again. Kiss a girl, you get enough germs to catch pneumonia. After you do, she'll never phone you. I'll never fall in love again. I'll never fall in love again. What do you get when you give your heart? You get it all broken up and battered. That's what you get, a heart that's shattered. I'll never fall in love again. I'll never fall in love again. Don't tell me what it's all about, 'cause I've been there and I'm glad I'm out. Out of those chains that bind you, that is why I'm here to remind you. What do you get when you fall in love? You only get lies and pain and sorrow. So for at least until tomorrow, I'll never fall in love again.
On Monitor, and it's one of his latest.
Hello?
Hello, is that Mrs. Andy Granatelli?
Yes, it is.
Well, congratulations, Mrs. Granatelli. You're our first phone guest today, and name that jingle. Are you familiar with our little game, ma'am?
I don't believe so.
All you have to do is identify today's famous advertising jingle, and you're our big winner. Ready? Here we go.
Come in, me too, and
That's it, Mrs. Granatelli. Any ideas?
Well, I don't think you played nearly enough
of that. Come, Mrs. Granatelli. Don't be a bad loser.
Oh, I know the jingle, all right. It's STPs.
Correct. And you
But you've hardly played enough to let people know how STP oil treatment protects engines better than ordinary motor oil alone.
I know.
And how STP cuts friction and wear to a fraction.
Look, Mrs. Granatelli.
And how millions and millions of motorists use STP to help keep their cars running smoother, cooler, quieter, and longer.
Hey, Mrs. Granatelli, don't you want to hear about your big prize?
Oh, certainly.
You've just won a year's supply of STP.
Thanks.
One of the most pressing issues of our time is student resistance toward the military draft system. Monitor's younger generation reporter, Linda Sutter, has some fresh information on this compelling subject, a burning question which has divided our nation into totally opposite points of view. Here is Monitor reporter Linda Sutter.
Roger Black, David Hawk, and Chester Gerlach are not radicals or revolutionaries. They're student leaders elected by students. They represent student thinking. They have said, along with 250 other student leaders, that they will refuse to be drafted as long as the war in Vietnam continues. Earlier this week, they talked about why.
There's simply no business in the United States getting into a small country, or any country, and telling them what kind of political organization they should have. It's not to me a question of national interest. I think that there's so many pressing problems here. The problem principally of the economic distribution of the country that have to be attended to. And we're taking all of our resources and putting them into Vietnam. And to buy an acceptable political solution in Vietnam and the political situation there, we're throwing away the country.
I remember when we first started to question Vietnam, it was a painful process, thinking that what our government was doing is very pernicious and very, very wrong. It's very possible that a Vietnamese brand of communism would appeal to more Vietnamese than an American brand of democracy. And that's their decision. It's their country. And if that's what they want, there's nothing that we can do, you know, really to stop them. Every time that we have a search and destroy mission, every time that we bomb cities and villages, it's sort of like police coming onto campuses. They react to the violence, and they become more and more convinced that democracy is not the kind of life that they want to live, and that's if it means death and destruction.
I'm prepared to go to jail, but the way I feel is that before I can live in the society, I have to be able to live with myself, and I don't think that I could be able to live with myself if I served in that war and was forced to do something that I just didn't believe in.
The time has passed. We can't wait any longer. The country can't wait any longer. Certainly the poor people can't wait any longer. If our demonstration of the feeling of students was not sufficient for them to be convinced, I think the students and the other people who oppose the war are going to have to demonstrate it in other ways. And by that, I think that probably by the beginning of next school year in the fall, and probably during the summer, we're going to see the strongest indication yet of anti-war sentiment in this country.
Later in this half hour, they'll talk more about student hostility towards the war and why so many students have come to feel this way. Linda Sutter, reporting for the younger generation on Monitor.
You're always on top of whatever's happening every weekend on the Monitor Beacon. This is Jack Hayes. All I said was, when the nicest people find time for it 24 hours a day, it's gotta be good. The radio station with more music, news, contests, weather, traffic, and information. And boy, did I get told where to go. This is the place, WNBC Radio 660, where you find the nicest people. Jack Hayes, weekdays, noon to 3.
I am New York housewife. Want to reach me? You can be there while I change the diapers, while I drive to the supermarket. You can be there with radio. 20 million New York radios, 20 million salesmen, keeping me company. New York housewife.
New Yorkers are tilted people. Reach them with radio. New York radio.
WNBC, Radio 660, New York. At just about 16 minutes after the Monitor Hour, here comes lighter than air Michelle Lee.
Is it upset in your heart, and you feel so far above me? The only time you come on down is when you feel the need to love me.
Now monitor sports with a look at the week ahead. Tomorrow, the Women's Southern Amateur Golf Tournament in Atlanta. Tuesday, the USLTA's Senior Men's Hard Court Tennis Championships at Mill Valley, California. Wednesday, the National Basketball Association completes its college draft in New York. Thursday, the Texas Open Golf Tournament in San Antonio and the National AAU Men's and Women's Gymnastic Championships in Atlanta. Friday, the Ladies PGA Dallas Civitan Open Golf Tournament, the National AAU Greco-Roman Wrestling Championships in Birmingham, Michigan, and the United States Open Table Tennis Championships in San Francisco. Gracious, these folks really do all that stuff, huh? Okay, on Saturday, the Eastern Sprint Crew Championships in Worcester, Massachusetts, the Intercollegiate Karate Championships at West Point, the NASCAR 400-mile stock car race at Darlington, South Carolina, and three big horse races. The Illinois Derby at Sportsman's Park, the Dixie Handicap at Pimlico, and the Withers Stakes at Aqueduct, plus Harness Racing's Messenger Stakes at Roosevelt Raceway. And Sunday, the Madrid Grand Prix Auto Race. And the United States takes on Haiti in a World Cup soccer elimination match in San Diego. And that's a look at the week ahead in sports.
When you told me that you loved me, and I thought I could tell that you did, my heart told me all was well. From the deepest part of me, there came a melody, complete harmony, as my heart played for me.
Certainly answers the question, whatever happened to the four lads? But now let's return to a subject which has split America into a divided camp, the resistance of youth toward entering the U.S. Armed Services. Here again is Monitor's younger generation reporter, Linda Sutter.
Earlier in this half hour, we heard three of the 253 student leaders who had announced their refusal to be drafted talk of what had caused them to make that decision, one which could have such grave consequences for them. Now David Hawk, Roger Black, Chip Gerlach, and also Wayne Herder talk of their deep resentment towards this war and of their bitterness towards the older generation, which they feel has failed to meet its own standards.
Going to war is the most serious thing that a man can be called upon to do. None. Not one of the rationales that the Kennedy or Johnson or now the Nixon administration is giving us for doing what we're doing in Vietnam is sufficiently compelling to get me to put that uniform on and that rifle on my shoulder and go over and make war against the Vietnamese. It's not our national interest, and so we come to the conclusion that we can best serve ourselves, best serve our country, and best serve our fellow man by and refusing induction and paying the consequences.
When you're on a campus and anyone's talking about Vietnam, there's no one who's defending the war. Anytime you go to a conference or any kind of meeting or comes up in a course, the sentiment is just so overwhelming against it. It's every student, basically. It's perhaps the most overwhelming majority of any group of people in the country.
You know, we got our values in our schools, in our churches, and from our families. And we believe all this business about all men are all brothers, and above all nations is humanity. And that's what I was taught in my Sunday schools, when I was a little kid. And as we were growing up, we saw, I think many of us saw first in relation to the way black people and minorities, Indians, are treated in this country, that there simply is very little relationship between our ideals and the country that you and I walk around in.
My parents, they always accepted that authority told them. They always accepted what the President of the United States told them as the truth. They always accepted what the Pope told them as the truth. And I know that I was taught, partially in high school and when I got to college, to question everything and question everybody. And don't necessarily accept what everybody says, but to study the issue for yourself and to make your come to your own conclusion.
I really appreciate my parents and their generation doing such a fine job of teaching me about the ideals of our country. I just wish they would live by.
Linda Sutter with the younger generation on Monitor.
A timely reminder from FTD. Mother's Day is May 11th, and the time to order your Mother's Day flowers is now. When you order early, your FTD florist can assure on-time delivery, even save you money on out-of-town orders. Ordering early means a wider selection, too. And this year, there's more. Many FTD florists can send a beautiful combination arrangement of flowers and delicious candy. So order now for the world's best mother. Yours. Your FTD member florist is the one who can make it all happen.
On the Monitor Baseball scoreboard, let's lead off with the American League. Baltimore won a doubleheader from the Yankees, 5-3 and 14-2. The Yanks have lost 7 in a row. Washington 4, Cleveland 3. That's the Senators' 10th win in 11 games. Boston turned back Detroit 4-2 in 11 innings. Minnesota won its 8th in a row, downing Chicago 4-3. The White Sox 6th straight loss. Kansas City crushed California 15-1. Seattle 6, Oakland 4 in the first game of a doubleheader. And over in the National League, the Mets. How about this? The Mets swept a pair from the Cubs by the identical scores, 3-2. Here we have Montreal 6, Pittsburgh 4. Philadelphia shut out St. Louis 5-0 on a 7-hitter by Grant Jackson. Rich Allen was back in the Philly lineup after being fined $1,000 for being AWOL on Friday and Saturday. He drove in 2 runs and scored a 3rd. Revenge is sweet. Atlanta 4, Los Angeles 1. Houston beat San Francisco and Juan Marichal 3-1, and in the process tied the Major League record for 7 double plays in a single game. And Cincinnati swept a pair from San Diego 3-2 and 12-0 on a 2-hitter by Tony Clonager. In hockey, Montreal wrapped up its 2nd straight Stanley Cup championship and 4th in the last 5 years by downing St. Louis 2-1. That gave Montreal a 4-0 sweep of the series. In golf, Larry Hinson won the first tournament victory of his career, the Greater New Orleans Open, with a par on the 3rd of a sudden-death playoff with Frank Beard. Both tied at the end of the regulation 72 holes with scores of 275. That's 13 under par. Hinson's win was worth $20,000. Orchestra and Gentle on My Mind. Monitor on My Mind, and I hope yours too. In fact, on your local NBC station every weekend. To name one, WOOD Grand Rapids, our Monitor voice in Western Michigan. And a break for all stations next, then we'll come right back. I'm Gary Moore.
Hi, this is Peggy Cass joining Roscoe and the Now People next week here on NBC Radio.
And that smile you're wearing is going to widen in just a few minutes, because our guest will be my good friend Alan King. I'm Gary Moore. Songs that keep sounding like it's going to end, and it never does. That was a Peppermint Rainbow. The title of the tune is Will You Be Staying After Sunday, and I resent the implication. I do not, however, resent my following guest. In fact, it so happens he's been following me for an hour now, wondering when he's going to get a chance to talk. All I really have to say is, Alan King, star of stage, screen, radio, TV, nightclubs, and now a Broadway producer, and mark you well, movie producer. Come on now, Alan. What is all this talk about your producing a film, or about to?
I'm going to produce a film in September, but I'm not going to do it in Hollywood. I'm going to do it in New York. I'm a New York boy, Gary, as you know, and I get uncomfortable west of Newark. And I'm doing a film. The script was brought to me called An Eskimo Named Joe Siegelman.
Yes.
Which fascinated me. And they wanted me to produce it on Broadway. And it needed some work. And then I've been a little disillusioned with the Broadway scene lately with, if you don't come out nude, you don't stand a chance.
Delighted to hear you say that.
Because this is a solid comedy that would have had a great chance on Broadway 8-10 years ago. In the generation impossible year category, just good entertainment.
Yes.
Except that this also has a terrific message about it. Because what it is a man, Eskimo Named Joe Siegelman, is a story of a man who's too old to become a hippie. So he becomes an Eskimo. Which I think makes sense.
Yeah, why not?
He withdraws from society at the age of 50. You see?
Yes, becomes a dropout.
And becomes a dropout. And one of the things is, of course, he's had a very unhappy sexual life with his wife, Frigid. And so the Eskimo is symbolic of this relationship, you see? And so we've got a man who walks around in an Eskimo suit for 2.5 hours on a screen.
Tea for two in an igloo.
That's right. So I decided that I would like to... I want to get into the motion picture business. I think right now... With the freedom, and I'm not talking about the absolute pornographic films that are being made. I'm talking about the artistic freedom that you have in motion pictures.
Sure.
Now, you can't get anywhere else. No other medium offers this. So I sold it as a movie, as this unproduced play.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to play a little cameo part in it.
Great.
Because I have to be in it somewhere.
Match.
And it's great fun because I've, in the last couple of years, besides my Broadway producing, I've been producing my television specials, and so I've got this itch.
Alan, what excites me very much about you is when I first knew you, and it hasn't really been all that long, it's been like, 12?
It's 12 years.
12 years, something like that. When I first met you, you were a guy with one bow to his string. The crabgrass jokes, mm-hmm. great as they were, marvelous, best of your kind. Well, all of a sudden, you've exploded in 20,000 different directions, and all of them successful. We haven't even touched your business life, and I won't do that. But you're involved in many businesses, and you...
You're channeling yourself, and yet you manage to keep it all under control. How do you do that?
Well, I don't sleep a lot. But no, what I found is that if I had one thing that I want to do more than anything else, and that I feel I do better than anything else, is humor, is a satirist.
Sure.
And what I found has happened is by opening up my life to all of these varied interests, it's also opened up my humor.
Yes.
It's taken me out of the wife joke. And so I apply all this, you see. It isn't something that I've studied. It's something that I was aware of while I was going. But all of a sudden, you find that your sphere, your world opens up and you can talk about. You know, I can get mad at more things now than I could before.
I was going to say that much abused phrase, too much. Except, of course, with Alan King, too much is not half enough. Thank you, Alan, for joining us on Monitor, and we'll be looking for your film. It sounds like a sequel to Nanook of the North Bronx. Bobby Vinton, proving that familiarity breeds something other than contempt, and it's catching.
To know you is to love you. Just to see you smile makes my life worthwhile. To know you is to love you. And I do, and I do, yes I do.
Petula Clark is directly ahead, so stay close, drive carefully, and be of good cheer on the Monitor Beacon.
Which recording will win the Grammy Award for the Record of the Year? Will it be Jeannie Riley's Hot Valley PTA, or will it be the Beatles' Hey Jude, or Bobby Goldsboro's Honey, or Simon and Garfunkel's Mrs. Robinson, or Glenn Campbell's Put Your Dog Lineman? See and hear them all perform with other Grammy winners. The Temptations, Dionne Warwick, Jose Feliciano, and Mason Williams on the Timex Special, the best on record, tomorrow night, 8 to 9 on Channel 4.
Dial Plaza 7, 8866, and WNBC Radio will put you in contact, the Sunday evening telephone show that invites you to discuss today's issues with a panel of clergymen. This is Mike Moss. I'm your host. Our panelists are the Reverend James Crawford, Rabbi Edward Sandro, and Father Don Pryor. This week, we'll discuss power. Be in contact. Listen to and call WNBC Radio, Plaza 7, 8866, tonight at 9:05.
WNBC, Radio 660, New York.
There's a certain song always follows me around. When you're close to me, you will hear it. When there is no other for them.
blues, doesn't she? That was Petula Clark.
I can't hold it on the road when you're sitting right beside me, and I'm drunk out of my mind merely from the fact that you are here. I've been known as the saint of San Joaquin, but I'm just as soon right now pull on over to the side of the road to prove I'm not so mean. La 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 la. On my collar and you're talking in my ear. Why, I once ran around with a gypsy girl named Shannon, the daughter of a hero. It is strange that I should mention that to you. I haven't thought of her for years. I can't hold it on the road when you're sitting right beside me.
If I sounded somewhat confused, that's only because I was confused. Don't forget, I'm the new boy around here. I'll learn in time. That, of course, was Pat Boone. And now we hear from owner Ralph Wilson of the Buffalo Bills and sports editor Len Dillon on Monitor's Open Line.
Ralph Wilson, there's been much talk about the Buffalo Bills moving from Buffalo because of a stadium problem. What is the situation as of right now?
The Bills are on the third year of a three-year lease. And at the last negotiations a couple of years ago, when the lease was renewed, the Bills were promised a new stadium. One would be started in the year 1969. The legislature in Buffalo, in the spring of 68, passed a $50 million bond resolution to construct a dome facility. The legislature now is trying to go forward with this $50 million dome facility, but they're deadlocked 10-10 on the site, whether it be suburban or downtown area.
Do you feel that Buffalo needs a dome stadium?
No, sir, I do not. I think that the approach now is impractical for a community to construct a dome facility, particularly with the excessive building costs today and with the fact that they only have one major league sport. However, I imagine the next two or three months, the Bills will have to make up their mind what they're going to do as far as playing after 1969.
Or you'll make it up for them.
Yes.
Ralph, if Buffalo decided to move, which city would you prefer to go into?
The only one that I have visited for a possible move is Seattle, Washington. Seattle, I think, would be a very good area.
Ralph, can we talk about your number one draft choice, O.J. Simpson?
Yes, sir.
Have you made any progress in signing O.J.?
No, we are a long ways apart from resolving the matter. I am happy to say, though, that I expect to meet within the next week or so with O.J. and his agent to see if we can narrow our differences.
There have been all sorts of reports about how much O.J. is demanding without revealing a figure. Would you call his demands realistic?
No, there's only so much that a football team can pay a player, no matter what his capabilities are.
Would you entertain the talk of a trade?
Well, I would prefer that O.J. played with the Bills. However, I would probably consider a trade if I was offered equal value.
Mm. Well, Ralph Wilson, owner of the Buffalo Bills, thank you ever so much for being our guest on Monitor's Open Line, and good luck in your efforts to sign O.J. Simpson.
Thank you very much, man.
Len Dillon for Monitor Sports.
And added sports notes, one of the strangest and happiest transatlantic races of all time roared off from London today, bound for the top of New York City's Empire State Building, or the other way around, if you prefer. Prizes totaling $144,000 went to winners in 21 categories. The whole thing is being staged to mark the 50th anniversary of the first transatlantic flight from London to New York, made in 1919. Contestants are combining any form of land, water, and air transport. And the entries include auto racing star Sterling Moss, RAF officers, a party of 86 bowler-hatted businessmen, and a 12-year-old girl from York, England. And Monitor wished them luck, much luck to all. If you happen to see a gigantic balloon floating toward the Empire State Building before May 11th, which is the race's scheduled deadline, it just may be Phineas Fogg. After all, it's not exactly around the world in 80 days, but it's certainly more than just a mini-challenge. And it was just announced not too long ago that RAF pilot Bill Fuller became the first finisher. He made it in 9 hours, 28 minutes, and 9 seconds, using a motorcycle, a helicopter, a twin jet supersonic jet, a slingshot, and a 9-iron. Generation's favorite songs, Aquarius. It's from the Broadway love rock musical Hair, but you'll be very surprised when I tell you the name of the band. Are you ready? It's Lester Lanham. Evans to Betsy. Remember when he used to concentrate on the businessman's bounce? There. Talk about bounce. Let's see the way the ball bounces nationally and worldwide, news-wise, that is, with NBC Monitor News on the Hour coming up next. This is Gary Moore.